Small Business and Startup Stories DSM features conversations with small business owners who share both their victories and failures on their path to success. Small Business and Startup Stories DSM is produced by the Greater Des Moines Partnership. More tips and resources are available at dsmpartnership.com/small business. I'm your host, Mike Caldwell.
Well, Kearney Levy, welcome to Startup Stories. You have an amazing background. What was it like attending boarding school as a young person?
It was really, really fun. I was in a small town north of Stockholm. I'm half Swedish. And one of the fun things about that time is I had a diary. And for the first couple months, I was writing in English. And then it transitioned to pidgin Swedish. And then by the end of the year, it was 13-year-old, more fluency, which was really fun. I got to really learn about my culture. It was fantastic.
So you were 13.
Yep.
So you were in Sweden. Where were your parents?
They were in California at the time.
Oh, just next door.
Oh yeah. And we spoke on a payphone on Sunday nights at 9 p.m. my time in Sweden. I would go to the payphone and make a collect call.
Oh my gosh. Amazing. So where did you go on to college?
I went to college at UC Davis in California, and a really fantastic experience. That's where I studied international relations. Interestingly, Davis is a location where a lot of ex-CIA people retire. And so we had fantastic professors and advisors there for the international relations program.
So you've been in several entrepreneurial roles in your past work. Can you tell us what provided you the best experiences for running the TechStars Iowa Accelerator?
Sure. Very early on, I was in San Francisco in 1999, before the first ever dot-com crash. And I was employee number 5 at one startup, and then joined another startup later that had already gone public, both in the e-learning space. And I ran business development. I did product management. Product management to this day is still one of the best roles in startups. That's when you get to work, figure out what the customer wants, and then translate that to the engineers. And it was really funny because a lot of those engineers were working hours like 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. And so a couple times a week, I would work those hours as well, and we'd have, you know, midnight meetings or 4 a.m. meetings. And then other days I had to work in the market, so I'd have to flip back to daytime.
Oh, wow. Well, as someone who used to run a product management group and product marketing group, I can tell you that I agree with you completely. Anytime you were involved with the core go-to-market on a product, from definition through execution, you learn so much.
Definitely.
About what goes on in the startup.
Yeah, so. For sure. I got to also do an intrapreneurial venture in my career as well with Kamen Industries. The whole organization is just very innovative. But Chris Nelson loved it when someone would raise their hands and say, I want to start something new. And I started a division that was leveraging Kamen's expertise in natural plant-based antioxidants and emulsifiers and even encapsulation technology, and started a business providing products to the personal care industry. And I will say that was my first big lesson in how long sales cycles can be. It took us 4 years to get into L'Oreal. Big lesson.
Yeah, but it turned out okay, if I remember right.
It did. It did. The company itself got eventually enveloped into another division when I left. But those products are fantastic. Kemen uses them, continues to use them in all the industries. And they ended up selling one of the product portfolios after I left. And then I also went through venture school here in Des Moines with a couple early stage ideas. One was in the wearables space. And that was really a lesson in manufacturing and prototyping. And we actually have some really great manufacturers here in Iowa, and especially in the plastics area. So, injection molding and 3D printing, really, really great place to dabble as a startup. Metals, not so much. That's a really tough prototyping business to be in. And so that was a big learning lesson. And I continue to, you know, I really like startups who are willing to go into hardware, but it's definitely a bigger responsibility than going into software.
It's not for the faint at heart. I cut my teeth in the hardware business, and it's simply not for the faint at heart. I remember working with an entrepreneur in town who wanted to get a prototype done and, you know, get to market, you know, get to production. And he thought he could do it for a couple hundred K. And we're like, nah, at least 2 million. And it was about 2.5. So yeah, that's the way it works.
It's a big deal. Yeah,
it is. I heard, you know, Fred Wilson from Union Square Ventures repeat a line that is hardware is hard. And I think the thing that most people don't realize is, you know, when you have to retrofit hardware, that means shipping things back, you know, updating the software and pushing refresh is a wonderful thing. And I wish you could do that when there's a physical hardware product. Yeah.
But, you know, hardware products are needed in the market, and innovation in hardware is needed as well. And so I don't want to discourage entrepreneurs going into it. Just need to approach it a little bit differently. Think through it. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And the thing is, they have much higher barriers to entry.
Yes.
If you're building a piece of hardware, if you can get to market with a piece of hardware, the simple cost of bringing another piece of hardware to market is so high, the investors will be very careful about putting more money into a company to just replicate what's already been there, knowing how much it's going to cost to do.
Definitely.
Well, as our listeners can tell by the diminished sound quality, we are recording this podcast from our separate homes during the COVID-19 virus. Mm-hmm. How has that affected getting ready for an accelerator class 3?
Well, it's been interesting. I will say one piece of it is that during what we call recruiting season, my office is on my lap regardless. So I'm talking to people online in different locations. What I really miss, though, are having coffees with the startups who are interested in the program locally. So that's something I'm looking forward to getting back to. But I'm used to being online and having virtual meetings quite regularly. I think the biggest difference is I need to put in my schedule, get up and go outside, you know, distancing myself from others, but get outside, breathe fresh air, and do that periodically through the day. But I will say one thing, a lot of people are available. A lot more people are available very quickly these days. You don't count how much time is in commuting to meetings or traveling to conferences. And all of that time now is time available to take another call. You know,
I was talking to some entrepreneurs this morning or yesterday, in a conference, and several of them mentioned how much easier it is to get customers on the phone right now.
Yeah.
Simply because the customers are also at home working, or at least in their office working. They're not, to your point, they're not traveling, and there is more time available. I remember flying for meetings back in the 90s before there was teleconferencing, and literally flying to London for a 2-hour meeting. Which, you know, at the time was like, this is such a waste. It was, you know, I'd lose 3 days by the time you fly to London and back and stay overnight at least one night. And now it's just like, well, just jump on a call. I mean, I jumped on a call the other day with a guy that I said, where are you at, by the way? He says, oh, somewhere in Germany. Like, it was like he was next door. It was perfect. So,
you know, I think that may be one of the changes that will last beyond this crisis. I think as people realize how much easier it is to engage personally and look into a camera and feel like you've got that connection, flying somewhere for a 2-hour meeting may not make as much sense anymore.
I agree. I am hoping that change happens for several reasons, including productivity and time, and also probably a little less carbon in the atmosphere. Yeah. So, Curtis, can you give us a little background on the Techstars Iowa Accelerator? What's the goal? I mean, Techstars is this machine. They're all over the place. And we were thrilled when Techstars announced they're coming to Iowa. So tell us a little bit about what's up with the Iowa Techstars Accelerator.
Yeah, well, I want to make sure everyone, you know, if they haven't seen the announcement, that Grinnell College really is responsible for bringing us here. And JT Thayer, who's the chief investment officer, really saw this as a project he wanted to undertake. And he reached out to lots of people for help, including yourself and Ben Milne from Dwolla and others who helped really make that conversation with Techstars go smoothly. JT and you know, we've all talked about it. One of the things JT did first is he said, we don't want to be the only partner here. We might be the funders at this point, but we really want to bring major colleges in Iowa, universities into the fold here. And so immediately ISU and Iowa, we reached out to, and they've become full partners. They're fantastic. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that. But we've also had conversations with UNI and with Drake and many of the universities really trying to help build the ecosystem for entrepreneurs across the board. This is not a territorial play whatsoever. This is how do we all work together to really make Iowa a fantastic destination for entrepreneurs, and how do our different organizations work together and let the flow of entrepreneurship go throughout the state. So we did decide that year one, it's going to be a broad tech accelerator, so not focused on one particular vertical. We did leverage the expertise that existed within the three universities, the two universities and the college who jumped together to start. So I sat down with Judy Iles and Lynn Allendorf, who run the Papa John Center for Entrepreneurship in each of their universities. So Judy at ISU and Lynn at University of Iowa. And we talked about who in their networks could help companies in what industries and with what technologies. So we really tried to identify those. And so a lot of the verticals that you see on our website, the Techstars Iowa website, are really come from, hey, you know what? We have mentors who can help. What was amazing was how many of the alumni and the professors and community members who are a part of these very vast networks here in Iowa have stepped up, raised their hands and said, we want a mentor. It's really been fantastic. So our first class will start in September. Applications are open until May 10th. Screening for that class takes place June 10th, and we'll be doing, you know, kind of the prep due diligence and getting everyone ready for the fall over the summer. And we really are looking for 10 amazing companies.
That's great. Well, I think it's wonderful you've been able to pull the universities together. I mean, universities by definition are competitive in state and across state lines. So it's wonderful to hear that that's happening. It's one nice thing about Iowa is we tend to be a little bit more work together and a little less competitive when it comes to fellow Iowans. So that's good. So the COVID-19 issues must be forcing you to plan for multiple options when it comes to running an accelerator class. Can you talk about the challenges and opportunities this presents to you?
Yeah, sure. Techstars across the globe runs six accelerators a year. So there are six terms. And the first term, which was in process, in person, most of them, there are a couple that are virtual already, flipped to virtual over a weekend. And we've got a virtual playbook. We know how to do virtual. It happened literally over a weekend. And so the next Monday, the teams were meeting virtually. Those programs, and then the ones that follow have all gone virtual. We're planning on having ours in person right now. If that changes, then we'll have to make the call, but we're very prepared for that. Really some great creativity has been taking place. So even for the virtual programs that Techstars has run in the past, they've been great. But now a lot of those ones who have typically met in person and really love that in-person engagement and are used to it, they're having a lot of fun with this. So they're making themed meetings and they're creating one-on-one coffees within the teams. I mean, they're really trying to make virtual feel like there's connection. And it's just endearing to see. So yeah, we're getting ready for whatever we need to, but everything's on schedule. Some of the terms, not Iowa, we're running exactly from September to December as planned, but some of the terms that were right in the middle of when the panic was hitting the US for the first time, they did shift one back, and we've accommodated all of those founders to make sure it works for them.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So can you tell us a little more about how you select participants? I mean, what kind of filters do you use, or what kind of questions do you ask to find the ones that are the best for this accelerator?
Yeah, real focus on founders and team. So that is first and foremost, looking for founders and team members who are passionate about what they're doing, connected to what they're doing. So they're actually in a space that they really understand and love and want to solve a problem in, who are tenacious and who work well with others, you know, who are able to work with people from a lot of different backgrounds and who are able to take advice and coaching and really leverage it and work with it. That is first and foremost, believe it or not. And then we look at kind of the size of the opportunity. So is this market really big enough to be a venture play? Because ultimately these are venture companies. And then we look at what kind of traction they have in those markets. And traction does not need to be sales. It might be there is a product out there and people are using it, and we're starting to see that the people really love using it. They're more and more coming on, or people are getting more invested and saying, wow, we really want to make this deal happen, LOIs, et cetera. So just showing traction of some level. Otherwise, it's really hard to accelerate them. If people come in with an idea, it's really hard to accelerate. So we need something to work with to begin. And then finally, the product itself. So many of these founders who are passionate about solving problems in their markets, they come in and they actually pivot their products. They change them. So they've got them out there. And that does speak to who's on that team again. We like to have a technical person or a product. So these capabilities, technical, product, and sales. Some combination of those across at least two people is really where we want that team to be, because it takes, first of all, it's a ton of work. So you need more than just one person at the accelerator. But two, having those capabilities, especially the technical one, to be able to iterate when the market starts giving feedback without having to go to a consulting company or, you know, programmers offshore and then wait for the answer. And it's just too slow and it ends up being quite costly sometimes, even if they're low cost coders. But it's best to have those part of the team.
Well, and certainly when you're trying to make technical decisions, or your programming team or person is saying, well, I have this complexity to deal with. Do I use this API or this one with these issues with how they run and how they perform and do they work with AWS and all those? I mean, you get into all that. And if you don't have someone with enough technical background to at least arbitrate the discussion and have some knowledge of the magnitude of decision you're making, you can make some real mistakes.
Yeah, definitely.
So Des Moines is blessed to have four accelerators, which is just amazing. You've been with me through this journey for several years here in Des Moines. And you know, now we have these four accelerators here. And I'm wondering, have you been meeting with your peers from the Global Insurance Accelerator, who, by the way, did have to pivot to virtual? Yes. Iowa AgriTech Accelerator, which is now delaying a little bit, and BrokerTech Ventures, which I'm assuming had to go virtual. What's come from these discussions?
Yeah, we have started putting regular meetings on our calendars. So we get together with our program managers and talk through what's working, what's not. And we had a discussion around, are we going to go virtual, you know, for the summer, for Ag Tech Accelerated? All of those items were discussed even earlier. I think it was our last meeting was the first week in March. So kind of inklings of what was coming, but we didn't know what was coming yet.
We
were talking about these things. Also, I will say when I get a call from a founder in the insurance space, I tend to ask them, hey, have you talked to the Global Insurance Accelerator as well? We've got so many really, really, or, you know, if they happen to be brokers, BrokerTech, we've got these amazing connections by vertical. And same goes with AgTech. You know, I like to make sure that they know that we've got these connections in a very specific vertical oriented accelerators that people should be looking at as well. There are going to be some who either missed the timing of some of those accelerators and want to go through Techstars, and they happen to be in the insurance space or the ag tech space. And or it just wasn't a fit for those accelerators for whatever reason, who may want to go through Techstars. But that's one way we work together. We also share, advice on, this is happening within my accelerator. Has anyone dealt with troubleshooting this particular problem? And I really, really appreciate that group of people. And I say I've also spoken to Eric Engelman over in Cedar Rapids. Our most recent conversation, he was on his way to a hardware store to get materials to make masks. So it was a very truncated conversation, but our hope is to, across the state, really formulate great relationships with all the accelerators, incubators, anyone helping out in this space.
Well, and that's how it works. I mean, the just having a peer group that talks to each other is hugely beneficial. And TechStars has always been good about bringing together accelerator leads and their number twos to network and learn from each other. And that's great once a year when they do it, or twice a year, whatever that is. But to do that on a regular basis, just to have a group of people actually locally. And like you said, when we get back to having a cup of coffee together, even better, just go sit down and talk about it. That's so great. Again, on the Techstars front, they recently announced some changes they're making throughout all of their accelerators. A lot of this was really about helping the startups. Can you walk us through, you don't have to go into the detail because I know they've got a big link on their website with all the data, but roughly what have they done?
Yeah, so just so you know, anyone who is a Techstars founder was reached out directly by the managing director, and they've gone through these in detail. For every single founder, they've had a one-on-one conversation about what's available. But the goal of it, the overarching goal, is let's make this easy as possible on founders. So one piece is, Techstars, as part of the funding, there's the $20,000, but then there's a $100,000 convertible note. They've extended the deadline for when that convertible note would need to be called. Just making it easy. Take that pressure just off the table right now. That's the last thing people need to think about, and it's something that we can easily do. The other one was some of the people, many companies come into Techstars accelerators because they want the worldwide advisory network. And that's why they come in. So even though they take the $20,000, the $20,000 is offered no matter what, some of them don't opt to take the $100,000 convertible note. And some of them realize that they might need that right now while VCs and especially angels are adjusting a little bit to the new normal. And not to say everyone's stopped, some are still investing, but many have just said, hang on a second, let me check with my LPs. Let's just make sure we're ready to go. And so there's a little pause going on. And so we said, well, let's make it easier on our startups by allowing them, if they opted not to take the convertible note, they can change their minds and come take it now. So I think that's really, really important. And then one of the other things we're doing is, if a program was delayed, such as term two and term three, term two was delayed to term three, some of term fours may be delayed as well, that there's an option to take some of that money up front. The $20,000 at least would be up front. The $100,000 would still be upon the start of the program. So it just helps a little bit with the transitions, travel, finding a place to stay in place, et cetera. But really, Techstars wants to make it clear, we want to support the founders. And so whatever we can do to make that's within our control. So if, not partner control, we have a lot of partners across the globe and they control some of the many too. But for the part that Techstars controls, we want to make it as easy as possible for those founders to get through this.
Well, and that's what makes so much sense. So speaking of getting through it, you enter a lot of startups and so do I. What are you hearing from them as they deal with the COVID-19 issue?
Yeah. So this is a toughie. Some of them are really in a hard place where they're at a standstill and may not have been able to have raised anything. And so they really are just at a standstill right now. But thankfully, there aren't too many who are in that position where they just need to say, we're out of business right now. There are companies who are conserving cash as best they can. I talked to a company in the travel space who's already in a Techstars program. I was on the phone with them as a mentor, but they closed their round. They were lucky enough to close their round in February. What they decided was, instead of going out and hiring the sales and marketing new hires that they were looking at, they actually went forward with, I think they were hiring one or two product people. They brought them on board, and they're focusing entirely on product right now with the customers that they already have to make sure when the world starts traveling again, that their product is absolutely, you know, version two as robust as it can be with this great input. And then they can start to focus on hit the ground running and ramp up. So people are making some good strategic decisions, I think, during this time. I think also ed tech. Oh my gosh, the virtual ed tech space. I was talking to a company, they said, you know, we used to have like maybe one lead, a couple leads a week or something. All of a sudden they're having to figure out what enterprise pricing looks like for, you know, enterprises of over 10,000 people. And they're saying, yikes, we weren't expecting this yet. So, you know, different things are happening to different companies and different verticals. Probably one of the most heartwarming things I've seen is companies who have been in the health tech space who have offered some kind of virtual functionality are putting together entire channels and product offerings around COVID-19. And they're either offering their services for free or at a reduced rate to just help out. Right. You know, people are just jumping in and helping.
And that's great to see. Yeah. So I've talked to those whose business is down substantially and also those whose business is up. What opportunities do you see this opening up for startups to benefit?
Yeah, well, I think that we're all learning how to virtually sell better, right? I mean, you virtually communicate and make those calls like you were mentioning. But also, I think people are getting really good at providing valuable content virtually. It used to be that, you know, once in a blue moon, there might be a webinar on something, but now there's so many, you really need to provide something of really solid value. And everyone is really working on those skills. I think also, revisiting remote teams and working collectively that way, there are some areas to save. I look forward to the day that we can get back to Gravitate because I do love the social community. But I think for companies who have struggled with maybe multiple offices in multiple cities and, you know, had to expend maybe more than they needed, they can think about that in a more, I guess, time it more with how their cash flow is going. And those are just some, but I'm sure there's so many new things coming out of this.
Yeah, I know. We did a conference a couple of weeks ago on remote selling. Yeah. And Andy Snook, who you know, is doing the conference, and he's been selling remote for 14 years. And his reasoning was primarily cost. I mean, his cost model of not traveling to all these companies and being able to remote deploy software, which, by the way, he was remote deploying software in 07 and 08 when it had to be physically installed on, you know, physical computing devices. And they made the commitment to do all that work to make it remote deliverable in every step of the way. Yeah. And it's paid off so well for them. And here they are in this new world. And guess what? Nothing changed. Yeah. So I think that those who can adapt to the remote world are going to see cost savings. Yeah. And to be honest, the world of flex working, we did a conference yesterday or the other day with Lana Fox on managing a remote company. And there are right now are three employees in that company. They're all three female. They all three have newborns and or are expecting. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? They pivoted to remote only, one, because they hired somebody remote, but two, because they're all in the situation where most babies don't really care if it's 8 to 5 or not. That's just part of the deal. And it's actually worked better than when they were trying to work together in an office. It's actually cleaned up their processes. And yeah. So to me, one of the things I think about that people are going to be doing right now is clean up your processes, systematize, eliminate redundancy, take some time and learn about Airtable or Close.io or Loom or whatever product it is you've been kind of putting off. Oh, I need to look at that. Now's the time, because when things pick back up, you're going to be hiring. Yeah. And if you have good processes in place hiring is pretty straightforward. As far as, I should say, onboarding is straightforward. In Lana's case, they've got somebody coming on in May. They already have their first month's work list in the task list for that new employee in May. Because they've already thought through everything they need to do, and they've already got their own, that person's task list loaded and ready to go. So I think there's a real chance for people to use this as a chance to build the kind of systems it takes to grow something.
Yeah.
And it's something most startup people don't think about, is what it's like to grow. How do you add 10 people next month? Well, hang on, if you're not ready, that doesn't work.
Right, right. It's true. I'll add on to that. One company I talked to, you know, they're early and they're in one of our programs elsewhere. They have a scale-up model, which is, you know, they're early right now and they still like to go on site and do the consulting to get, this is in the data space, really exciting technology. And, you know, I'm challenging them to say, use this time to figure out what scale will look like, figure out how to do this virtually and remotely now. And if you do that, you win. You win. If you're able to turn, you know, huge company on remotely from where you're sitting right now, you're basically going to win this space. So don't think about taking those steps that maybe seemed like the ones you needed to take in the past.
Well, think if you're right. If you're in a competitive situation and they say, how long till you're installed? You can say, we can have it done by 5
right
today. And the other, the competitive company is saying, well, we need to come on site, do a 90-day assessment, and it's $10,000. And after we do that, then we got to get, you know, it's like, hey, if you've worked with your industry, you know about their firewall requirements and all that stuff, and you can preset that, you're absolutely right. You will win. So,
yeah. So it's really, it's an exciting time. I am a very glass half full. I see the positives at the end. I am absolutely thrilled with being in this community, how amazing this community is. I mean, people are helping out other people however they can, whether it's, you know, high school kids who need to get access to lunch, or whether it's people who, you know, the mom and pop restaurant and they don't know about the CARES Act yet, helping them out. I mean, it is just heartwarming to see. And we're going to come out of this, especially this community on the other side. I feel really good about that.
I do too. Well, with that, Kurti, I want to thank you for being on Startup Stories and joining me on this virtual call, the first time we've done a virtual podcast.
That's right. This is super exciting. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Small Business and Startup Stories DSM podcast. Inspired by these stories, we offer a hub full of resources needed for any small business owner to grow and succeed in Greater Des Moines, Iowa at dsmpartnership.com/smallbusiness. Thanks for listening.